Your New York weekend is not complete without the Joan Hamburg Show on 77 WABC.
All right, everyone. Welcome to the Joan Hamburg Show. And we meet on Saturdays at 2 o'clock. And I'm so happy to have you with me. I have to tell you, I felt for the first time in a long time like moving out of New York City with the UN, with the president. The entire city was a parking lot. It took me over 2 hours to get from the East 80s to the 50s. And ultimately, and even my daughter who took the subway said she was 20 minutes late for an appointment. The city was shut down. There were armored cars on Fifth Avenue. One lane was open. And I was meeting some of the ladies at Michael's for lunch on a Wednesday, which is Michael's, the sort of hot restaurant in the 50s. That's their big day. It was almost like a joke. The phone was ringing every minute. I've got to cancel. I can't get there. All the streets were closed. It was really crazy. So what you've got to do is eat and stay home. The UN, and by the way, I watched, of course, as you all did, some of the UN. I think it's the first time I have ever seen leaders of the world laugh at a president. So now, luckily for the president, he said they were laughing with him, not at him. So that's his happy place. Let's talk about a couple of things. So while I was stuck, I checked out my old go-to place when you need luggage or fanny packs or anything else, just because I was there. Lexington Luggage on Lexington Avenue between 61st and 62nd Street, north of Bloomingdale's. You know, right on the side of Bloomingdale's on 59th Street is a David Burke restaurant that has the most delicious tomato soup and grilled cheese sandwich. Yummy. You go right in off the sidewalk. It's between 3rd and Lex. But meanwhile, let's get back to Lexington Luggage. I needed a fanny pack. You would think everyone had a fanny pack, right? No one had a fanny pack. Lexington Luggage had a zillion of them, and they have terrific discounts. They've been around for 40 years. They have Travel Pro. Oh, guess what? When I was a girl, my mother played Mahjong. Now, I think people must still do it because they had Mahjong sets at Lexington Luggage. I thought it was canasta, that bridge canasta poker. But they had Mahjong. They have all kinds of things. They have the best carry-on. Check it out. Go to lexingtonluggage.com. And they repair all kinds of luggage. 212-223-0698. The prices are great. You can ask for Elliot. Then, I hadn't been there in years. Ever hear of Eisenberg Sandwich Shop? 1929 they started. Their slogan is raising New York's cholesterol. They cater. They deliver. And the menu is really reasonable and old-fashioned. Matzo ball soup, cold borscht, clam chowder. They have hot turkey sandwich. You know, I love hot turkey sandwiches. They have it with mashed potatoes, vegetables, gravy, cranberry sauce, really good hamburgers, and all kinds of yummies. People were ordering. The line was so long, it was almost scary. And one guy said to me, you've got to try their Reuben. It's pastrami, corned beef, or turkey with Swiss cheese, sauerkraut, Russian dressing, grilled on rye bread. And they have peanut butter and jelly sandwiches for $3.50. I was at Eli's, you know, one of the Zay bars, at their restaurant on Madison Avenue. Eat. A sandwich is like $20-something dollars. This place, grilled cheese, $5. And so, I mean, really terrific buys and delicious sandwiches and very good salads. So it's packed. It's packed. But it's been around forever. So check it out. It's between 22nd and 23rd Street. Don't go anywhere this week. Wait until next week. And a lot of you are already asking us about all the new restaurants. I ate in Philly a while ago in a great restaurant called Leonetti, or L-E-O-N-T-I, 103, now in New York, just opening, 103 West 77th Street. There was a wonderful restaurant called Dovetail, very upscale and classy, and this Italian restaurant is coming in there. It's going to seat 70 people, a very simple menu, really good food, and really good pasta. So put this on your list of new restaurants you want to try. And then a really, Missy Robbins is a famous chef. Her restaurant is Lilia. She opened her second Italian restaurant. It's called Missi, M-I-S-I. And it's right across, she's great. It's a 4,000 square foot restaurant. And she's got a pasta making room. It's in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, on Kent Avenue. So that's a couple of things. Meanwhile, we've got a great show to entertain you. We've got the one and only Joel Gray, who is truly amazing. Well in his 80s, got a big hit in the theater district. So he's going to tell you about that. And we're also going to talk to a guy in his 20s who did a major documentary on Russia and their role in American life and American politics. If you have had doubts before, this may dispel them. So come on along. We've got a great show for you. Enjoy this Saturday. And I'm Joan Hamburg.
Backstage with Broadway's Best. Behind the Curtain with Joan Hamburg on 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
All right, everyone, welcome to the Joan Hamburg Show. And I am excited because a famous star, a singer, a dancer, a director, a gifted photographer, has now even become more famous, if such a thing is possible, for doing something so unlikely. I'm talking about the one and only Joel Gray, who has brought to the world of theater Fiddler on the Roof, everyone's favorite, but he did something rather extraordinary. Joel Gray has brought this fiddler to the theater world in Yiddish. And even though you say Joel Gray, but I know him as an actor from Cabaret. I know him from a million things. What happened? What happened on your way? No, really, how did this come about?
The head of the Volksbühne, Zalman Mlotek is his name, called one day and said, we have gotten the rights to a Yiddish version of Fiddler on the Roof that was done 50 years ago in Israel, never been in the United States. And would you like to play Tevye or direct it?
No, out of the blue.
Yeah. So I said, I think I'll direct it. I had no idea what I was going to do. First of all, I don't speak Yiddish.
I was going to say, that could be a little block, but not you.
Well, I know that show and those characters so well. I mean, I went to the first preview in Washington 50 years ago.
Oh, my gosh.
And I've loved it ever since. And I thought, yes, I'd like, this is a good challenge.
And the funny thing, well, it's not funny, but when I heard, you know, in the trades and everything, this is going to happen, we all thought, has Joel Gray lost his mind? Yiddish, he doesn't speak Yiddish. How much of the audience speaks Yiddish today? How are they going to get this? And then when it opened, I got a call. A friend said, I have never seen anything like it. I think I cried for 2.5 hours. And she said, I'm not even Jewish.
That's the plus is that so many non-Jewish people have come and found themselves in
so
this play,
up.
In these characters, in this situation. And Yiddish didn't mean a thing. And it meant everything.
Right.
You know, because it was the mother language. The mother tongue. Mama Lushin.
Mm. That's right. Wasn't that the name? Mandy Patinkin.
Right.
Had talked about that. I'm talking to Joel Gray, who has brought Fiddler on the Roof as the director in Yiddish to the Museum of Jewish Heritage, and that's right on Battery Place, to huge raves. I mean, one of the biggest hits this season. Now, when you were casting, did the cast speak Yiddish?
They had to learn whatever the audition was for the role. They had to learn it in Yiddish.
That's hard. It's like an opera singer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And there were 2,000 people wanted to audition. That was such a surprise. And some people were better at it than others.
Yeah.
But all these non-Jews and non-speaking Yiddish Jews.
Right out there.
All practiced and came in and sang, and it was amazing. And we got the most beautiful cast.
Did you feel, I mean, Fiddler's no surprise, and we know the universal impact it has on everyone's heart. But were you surprised at the emotional impact it had in New York? I mean, we thought, all right, he's going to do this. There'll be an audience, of course, because that group, Folk Bean, has its own audience
right.
that goes to Yiddish theater. But what about the rest of the world? So when that review came out and people were like, I can't believe what I experienced.
Yeah.
It had to be shocking.
People are surprised.
You too?
No. No, because I really had wonderful, talented people and a great design team. And we were all, no one was being paid much money. You know, it was a labor of love. And we all were committed to telling the story.
Was it hard to direct it because it was in Yiddish? Did you have to go a different way?
Yes, I did. I directed it first in English. Every scene.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And then once they knew
the whole,
the center of the scene and the meaning of the play, then we added on the Yiddish.
Unreal. Joel Gray, our guest, directing a major production that they're all talking about is going to go to Broadway. Well, we'll keep our fingers crossed, but you don't have to go to Broadway to see it. You can see it right now at the Museum of Jewish Heritage. I can't say you. It's the toughest ticket in town at 36 Battery Place. And it's Fiddler on the Roof, but as you've never heard it before. So you had said to me once a while ago, I don't remember what you were doing, one of your 90,000 things before breakfast, that you were going to sort of wean yourself away a little bit from acting and do other things.
Yes.
This is another thing.
Excuse me. Yes. I'm not that interested in acting anymore.
What happened to you?
I think I played a lot of roles. Varied. Varied and interesting. And, you know, I don't think you have to do the same thing for your whole life.
Mm-mm.
And I had directed The Normal Heart.
I remember that.
With George Wolfe on Broadway. And I directed a play a couple of years ago in New Jersey, the Two River Theater.
Yeah, which is a good theater.
Which is great. And directing was always in the back of my mind. And I love actors. And I got...
Well, you're an actor, too.
I got such great people. And I, just fell in love and was so grateful to find a Tevye who is unlike any Tevye you've ever seen.
Tell me what that means.
He's a leading man. You can really believe he's the father of five daughters with a wife, and he's had sex to make those daughters in those years in Anatevka. You know, it's
so
more
he's got a lot
vibrant. Mm-hmm. And he's a great actor. His name is Stephen Skibell. And you've got to see him.
You found him?
He auditioned.
Just like that. You didn't tell an agent, go get me this guy.
No, I didn't know that he did. I had no idea that he spoke Yiddish.
And he spoke Yiddish?
Perfectly.
You're kidding.
Yes.
Do we know him?
Yes, he's been in a lot of plays. Mm-hmm. He's like one of those great actors that everybody sees.
Yeah, but always
has
works.
Has not happened his own moment, and he is now.
And here it is, right? Amazing. When he came on that audition stage and that Yiddish came out of him, you must have been, where's this guy been?
Yeah. And I was so grateful because I knew we wanted to tell the story in a more realistic way, not in a buffoonish...
Right, or the caricature.
Right, caricature. Mm-hmm. And he's... Well, when are you coming?
Soon. I cannot wait to see this.
But you can't get tickets.
I know. I'll have to use pull.
Yes. You know somebody.
I'll have to call someone that I know. I'm talking to Joel Grey. Now, a lot of you may not know that Mr. Grey is also a superb photographer.
Oh, thank you.
Well, you are.
I thought you were going to say... Mr. Grey is the son of Mickey Katz.
A famous actor.
A famous comedian. Yiddish comedian. But I still never learned Yiddish.
Well, because you were an American.
And I was also, I didn't want to ever do anything musical originally. I just wanted to be an actor.
What kind of childhood was that? Your mom was not... A comedian, just the opposite. I wanted to cheer you up this morning. But growing up with your daddy, who in his time was really famous, and everyone knew him.
And funny. And beautiful.
Funny with you,
and
too.
And a beautiful man. I mean, a very full of heart, mm-hmm. and commitment.
So when you told them that you were not going to be...
A musician,
a doctor, a lawyer, an accountant...
Or a singer.
Right. You were going to act.
Yes. And that was when I was 9.
So what happened?
What?
What was the first thing that happened that you knew it was all possible?
Oh, the first part I ever played... was in a play called On Borrowed Time. And it was a great role, and it was a big hit on Broadway at the same time in the 40s. And the minute I started rehearsal, I was the only kid in the show, I thought, this is heaven. They're listening to me.
Right.
They're respecting me. If I know my words... and I behave in a professional way, I'm an equal. And all of a sudden, that was a new world for me. I wasn't a kid anymore.
Right. That's really interesting. And
did you read my book?
Of course I read your book.
Yes.
And I've read your book. I've looked at your photography books. I actually sprang and bought one. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my God. No wonder I'm here.
That's why I gave it to my husband, who gave up his law career to become a photographer. We thought he was out of his mind. He probably was. I'm talking to Joel Grey. So your
who's
father,
not out of his mind.
Not out of his mind.
Not at this moment, anyway.
No. Praise the Lord. But your daughter has made your father, if he could see it, and I'm sure he does, a very happy man because she had the singing genes, the whole bit.
She's a dancer, essentially.
And a great dancer.
A great dancer. And
Jennifer Grey.
Jennifer Grey. And one of the young actors in our play came and said, I was totally in love with Dirty Dancing and your daughter. And he's a kid.
Oh, gosh. That's so funny. But I remember when she was on Dancing with the Stars and she had an injury.
Right.
Only your kid would have toughed. I thought,
oh, my God.
She's right. Joel's daughter. I mean, who's going to do that?
I know. I was stunned.
She had a terrible injury that no one could dance through. And she
was great.
Did.
And she won.
She won.
Yeah.
It was extraordinary.
She's a wonderful girl.
She
has a 16-year-old daughter.
I know.
And her husband is a wonderful actor by the name of Clark Gregg.
And did you know him before?
Before she married him?
Yeah.
No.
I know. It's almost all unreal. So now that a huge success, people are saying, give this guy the Tony.
Oh, wasn't that hilarious?
I love
that. You can't get the Tony for Off-Broadway.
I know. Well, they got to change that.
I like that idea.
I would like it, too.
Excuse me. I'll take it.
They have special categories. They have to have an Off-Broadway category. Because why not? You know, when I was a kid, thinking I was going to be an actor, Off-Broadway was really Off-Broadway. You were in the basement of a church, which didn't even have heat. And you would make your relatives come. And when they stopped coming, the shows would close. Because who was going to go, right?
Right.
And we've seen the whole world change. So now, with all these credits, and this has to be like the icing on the cake, even with major roles like in Cabaret, to direct something unlikely that is the talk of the town.
I'm very grateful.
Well, you're very good. And that's what happens. But is there any unfulfilled fantasy in that fertile brain? Is there anything you haven't done that you would like to do?
I'll tell you tomorrow.
Okay.
If I get an idea.
Okay.
But there's nothing. My focus is so complete.
That this is the moment.
That this is the moment that's in front of me. I don't know what's ahead.
Only good things. Only good things. Right? More directing, more challenges, because that's what keeps human beings going.
And interested.
Yeah. You're not going to sit on a rocker in the actor's home saying, I could have, should have.
Well.
Not yet.
Yeah, you know, those things happen, but luckily I'm full of...
Fabulous.
Full of life and excitement and gratefulness.
And we're grateful, because wherever there's Joel Grey, there's something amazing to look at, to listen to hear, to see.
I'm so glad I came over today.
Well, I'm so glad
this.
You came over. You're making me feel really good. The one and only Joel Grey, if you haven't seen this Fiddler yet, you've
got
to go see
it. You can't get tickets.
I know. You have to say, you know, Mr. Grey. And you do. You heard him on the radio. What's
right.
better than that? And it's at 36 Battery Place at the Museum of Jewish Heritage.
Do you know that area at all?
It's very so well.
Beautiful. The park is probably the most beautiful part of a New York park that I've ever seen next to Central Park.
And you know what's interesting? A lot of people don't realize, first of all, they have restaurants there
yes.
that are really delicious. And I went to a wedding, believe it or not, there. Oh, my gosh, you look out the window.
I know, and the Statue of Liberty is
right
there.
The whole world is there.
Yeah.
Wonderful food. And that area of Manhattan, which a couple of years ago was just starting to come to life.
After 9/11.
Again, and is now booming.
It's terrific.
So this is something you have to do. 212-945-0039. Truly a tough ticket, but definitely worth it. Try to do it before it goes to Broadway. Thank you, Joel.
Thank you, Joan, always.
I'm Joan Hamburg. You're listening to WABC, and we're celebrating a life-affirming show in Yiddish, Fiddler on the Roof.
New York culture with real New Yorkers. Joan Hamburg, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
All right, everyone. Welcome to the Joan Hamburg Show. Well, you know, we are, many of us, up to our eyeballs with news. MSNBC, you name it, CNN, Russia, Trump, America. But someone did something, took this a step further. Jack Bryan, who's a very interesting man, did a documentary called Active Measures. And this documentary takes a fascinating look at the connection between Russia and Donald Trump. It describes through many major players and behind-the-scene players what Russia did to try to manipulate many events in the world, but the one that we are all most obsessed with is our recent presidential election. You also get a look at Putin's career through his election as president of Russia and through his relationship with Donald Trump. You're also going to find out more than you probably want to even know about Paul Manafort. So he was the campaign chairman and very involved with foreign shell companies that were accused, or people say, laundered money. So let's start how Jack Bryan, who is the producer, became involved in this at all. Where was this in your scheme or list of things that you wanted to do or were doing, Jack?
Well, first, thank you so much for having me on. I think it was basically late March of 2017 was when I really decided to make this film. And it was after having really followed the story closely throughout the election and really thinking it was very important, but then feeling like people weren't really getting the full extent of it and weren't really understanding what had happened. And even though there was, you know, good news coverage of it, it felt like it was washing over people because in reality what happened went back really far, went back decades. And that was the origin point of it, of a lot of operations that were ongoing by the Russians that were then turned towards the 2016 election. And so I think that a lot of people didn't understand the depth of it, and so they're missing the full story. So we wanted to create one place where people could sit down and understand the depth and the breadth of it. And so that became our priority. And we just sort of, me and my partners, we, you know, dropped our other projects and quit our jobs. And this became the only thing that we thought was important doing because it's simultaneously the largest corruption scandal and the largest espionage scandal possibly in American history.
Now, there are a couple of things that are fascinating. First of all, how you got to people like John McCain, and, you know, even more important now that he's gone, all the footage that you had of him, Hillary Clinton, and a lot of other major players. How'd you get to them? Was this part of your world?
Well, not really. I mean, I think what was important was that they've both been amazing, or had been, in McCain's case, had been amazing on this topic in terms of pushing back against Russian aggression since about 2004. Mm-hmm. I mean, Russia had been running these exact same operations all over Europe, and they were the two biggest voices pushing back in the American government. And so they were essential parts to telling the story. And I think what they needed to understand before they agreed to sit with us was that this wasn't going to be some conspiracy theory. This wasn't going to be some, let's make the most anti-Trump documentary we can make. When they saw who else we were talking to, that we approached really respected diplomats, that we approached really respected people that were, you know, run think tanks and had frankly helped the Senator McCain and Senator Clinton with their policies as when they were in the Senate. And so they realized, okay, this is going to be a really deep dive into something that we really care about, that we think is very important. And so I think that was really our what made it possible for us to talk to them.
Right. And when you think about it and watch the documentary, you really understand that it's not just about Putin or Trump. It's about America. It's about democracy, everything that we are. But was it frustrating? And is it frustrating? You did a documentary that got tremendous attention. You can see it on iTunes, and you should watch it in light of what's going on. But the public particularly Trump's people, seem like, eh, so what?
Yeah, I mean, I think that when Nixon was left office, he had 25% approval rating. There's going to be a portion of the population that aren't going to care, that aren't going to acknowledge it. And so for us, what we thought was the important part was to really speak to the middle, to speak to the people that don't really understand how dangerous the story is and how important it is for people to fight back and protect their democracy. And our hope is that that will have a sort of a wave, a ripple effect that will affect the sort of the dug-in supporters. And so by talking to the middle and the moderate right, I think that that's where we have the best chance at having an effect.
And if you think you know Vladimir Putin, you know, it's very interesting. One of my kids lived in Russia for 7 years, started a business there before Perestroika, after Perestroika. And Putin was sort of everywhere, but it wasn't the Putin that you get to see in this documentary. First of all, what you did in Active Measures was show how he became involved in New York real estate, in a way, or his rise to power created
that. His network certainly, yes. His network certainly was involved in that, yeah.
So really a whole different and interesting time. There are many documented facts there. Of course, as Jack Bryan mentioned, we have to make people care about it and pay attention. A major magazine, I think it was Vanity Fair, in talking about your documentary, asked the question, is this film what in the end could bring the guy down? What? And there is no answer to that, right?
Well, no, there isn't. I mean, what I hope is that by people understanding the background information, the context, they'll really understand the news that's happening now. And if you understand what's happening now in the news with Manafort, with Michael Cohen, it confirms everything that's in the film, I mean, in a very surprising way. And it also, you will understand how disturbing this is and how bad this is for democracy and how we have to deal with it. But I think it's very hard to understand what's happening in the current event space without understanding the background on these guys. And so I hope if we can contribute one thing, it will contribute to people understanding the news of the day.
Yeah, that's right. Going what's behind the news of the day rather than just a headline. But talk a little bit, if you will, Jack, about Manafort, his involvement and how this really became a big deal and in the end took him down.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, Manafort has been a shady character since the 1980s. He had a housing corruption scandal in the 80s, and by the 1990s, he's kind of out of the Republican Party. There's been a lot of corruption around him, and so he goes international, and he starts involving himself in very shady elections in the Philippines, in Kenya, in Angola, and develops sort of a brand as the sort of the dictator's lobby or the torturer's lobby. And then in 2004, he gets brought into Ukraine to support pro-Russian candidates and to support the Kremlin line in Europe and in America. His guilty plea shows that he was in 2012 already from Ukraine attacking Hillary Clinton as part of his job. And then in 2010, he runs a campaign which is shockingly similar to the 2016 election against a female pro-Western, anti-Russian candidate. And they, you know, throw the lock her up chants at her. They say that she's a criminal. They even say that she wasn't born in the country. And it's a shockingly similar campaign that they ran. And the previous time that this gentleman had run, they had hacked the vote. There was strong support for him, he'd gotten more than 100% voter turnout in those locations, which is obviously impossible. And so the shady elections and the election attacks that the Russians had committed in Ukraine were done through Paul Manafort. And not only that, but Paul Manafort was also dealing with the Russian mafia in very direct ways, Dmitry Firtash, who is connected to the Ukraine-Russia gas trade, which is the number one source of revenue for the Russian mafia. He worked with Firtash on many projects. Firtash is currently in Vienna, being charged with being a organized crime. Mm-hmm. was the term that was losing me. And then also Oleg Deripaska hired him, $10 million a year contract to represent Russian interests. Oleg Deripaska was denied a visa for his connections to organized crime. So he is, Manafort is directly in the Putin lobby, and he is directly in the Russian organized crime sphere while he's working in Ukraine.
Right. So worse than people thought. And Jack Bryan, in this film, Active Measures, not only talks to Clinton and John McCain, but he talks to people who really were there, the former CIA chief of staff, and people like that who really had an inside link. So when all is said and done, you interview all these people, there's no question you have all this fact. What the Putin-Trump coziness, the relationship, it's much more complicated than just some real estate deals, although that's a big deal. Mm-hmm. What would you, if you had to analyze it, looking back, what really is this about?
Well, I think that like any relationship, it's about different things at different times. And I think that that's the part that people are missing, is that they sort of think, well, why in 2004, why in 1995 would Donald Trump be having these relationships with Russian oligarchs? It's not like they were planning on having him run for president then. The first response is, well, he was talking about running for president then, so it was probably in the sphere. But they're right. That wasn't the main thing they were interested. At that point, they were interested in laundering their money, and the Russian mafia working as a branch of the Russian government, laundering especially Russian elites' money into America. And the easiest way to do that is to push it into real estate. And so initially, that's all it was. It was, this was a very easy place for us to stash our money, is in this guy's buildings and in the development of his buildings as well.
So a lot of Trump buildings all over.
All over the world, yeah. A lot of it. And so eventually, as he becomes closer and closer to that network, you see him doing deals more directly with high-up oligarchs. And then as that continues, the politics become in play.
Well, a fascinating look. And you as a kid, actually through your dad, knew the Trumps.
Yeah, and I think that that was one of the sort of the things that perhaps led me to start this project, or allowed me to sort of get an advanced look at what was going on, because I didn't really make the connection early, you know, early. But as I started to, as during the election, as things started to fall into place, and as it seemed clear to me that this was a Russian operation that Donald Trump was helping out with, because everything that you would expect to see if that were the case happened. And I remembered at that point hearing, you know, since 2008 that Donald Trump was, you know, associated with the Russian mafia, and not in any specific or direct way, but it was just sort of almost a thing that people would joke about, and you wouldn't need to explain the joke because everyone kind of knew that he was mobbed out. And so I think that probably pushed me a little earlier to start believing that this was a very important problem. And pursuing it professionally.
And probably changed your life, Jack.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. The last year and a half has been, my entire everything has changed.
Because, right. You know, it's, it may have taken Russia to find out who you really are, but but it worked. All right. Jack Bryan, congratulations. Active Measures. Really interesting. Go take a look. You can do it on iTunes. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Jack Bryan, the producer of Active Measures, and a fascinating look. We know the headlines, but you really want to know the story. It's all there. I'm Joan Hamburg, and you're listening to WABC.